If you would, turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 41. That's where we'll be looking this morning and studying from. It's good to see each of you. We've had several that have been traveling that have come home, and we've had several that are sick that are back, and we still have a few that are out, but it's good to see a stronger number this morning. On Wednesday evening, we were studying Genesis chapter 40. And in Genesis chapter 40, we have the account of Joseph interpreting the dreams of two individuals. Who are those two individuals? Butler and the baker, or you have the cupbearer and the baker, right? And with these two dreams, the dreams are very similar, but with these dreams, he makes an interpretation of them. And who gave Joseph the ability to do such a thing? God did. It came from the Lord. Over and over again, we find that the Lord was with Joseph, and that is how he had this ability to interpret these dreams. Another thing that stands out as you read through Genesis chapter 40, and also as we study through Genesis chapter 41, is that he does not try to take any type of, take pride in his ability. What he does is he always says, it's of the Lord. He says that in verse 8 in chapter 40, which is such a significant verse. He says, "Do not interpretations belong to God. Tell it to me, please." And so he does not seek his own fame or his own glory. Joseph is looking to do what God has given him the ability to do, and that's to interpret these dreams, because it was God-given. The similarity between the two dreams is really the statement of their heads would be lifted up. What does that mean, that their heads would be lifted up? Okay. In the case of the cupbearer, he's got to be restored back to his position. He was the cupbearer for Pharaoh. We talked about the significance of that, how much he would be a very important person, make sure that Pharaoh didn't get poisoned, what was provided for Pharaoh would be appropriate. But he gets restored back to his position in how many days? 3. And that's what the dream and that's what the interpretation is that Joseph provides. As far as the baker, though, something different's going to happen to him in 3 days. His head is going to be lifted up, but it's not going to be lifted up in the same manner. That statement, his head being lifted up, means he's going to what? Yeah, Joseph has to tell him to his face, you're going to die in 3 days. Pharaoh is going to put you to death. And that's exactly what comes to pass. Joseph's interpretation is 100% correct, and the cupbearer returns to his status. The baker returns, or the baker is killed 3 days later. But then what's interesting is that there is a stipulation a little bit that Joseph put before, I guess you could say, the cupbearer. And he said, I'm going to interpret your dream, and he does, but he says, remember me. Because what's going to happen is you're going to be put back in your position with Pharaoh. And I've been put here unjustly. I've been kidnapped. I'm a foreigner. I don't belong here in prison. I have done nothing to be deserving of this. If you remember, Potiphar's wife had lied about him and said that he had done, practically tried to rape her. Well, he says, I don't belong here. So what do I need you to do, cupbearer? Remember me. I need out of here. I need out of prison. I don't belong here. As we looked at the end of class, at the beginning of chapter 41, did the cupbearer remember Joseph at first? No, eventually, right? That's exactly right. So this morning we're going to be looking at Genesis chapter 41. We had several that weren't here on Wednesday that are here today, and also because of the text, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go on and read through the first 13 verses as a bit of review. And then that'll help us have a better context of what we're about to study. So let's look at Genesis chapter 41. Now it happened at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream. And behold, he was standing by the Nile. And lo, from the Nile there came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed in the marsh grass. Then behold, 7 other cows came up after them from the Nile, ugly and gaunt. And they stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. The ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 sleek and fat cows. Then Pharaoh awoke. He fell asleep and dreamed a second time, and behold, 7 ears of grain came up on a single stalk, plump and good. Then behold, 7 ears, thin and scorched by the east wind, sprouted up after them. The thin ears swallowed up the 7 plump and full ears. Then Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. Now in the morning his spirit was troubled. So he sent, and he called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, and there was no one who could interpret them to Pharaoh. Verse 9, Then the cupbearer spoke to Pharaoh, saying, I would make mention today of my own offenses. Pharaoh was furious with his servants, and he put me in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard, both me and the chief baker. We had a dream on the same night, he and I. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now a Hebrew youth was with us there, a servant of the captain of the bodyguard. We related them to him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each one he interpreted according to his own dream. And just as he interpreted for us, so it happened. He restored me in my office, but he hanged him. Some of this we discussed on Wednesday night, but I think it's good to bring back to memory because it's what we're dealing with throughout pretty much this whole chapter is Pharaoh having these two dreams. In these two dreams, we have, first of all, the sleek fat cows. There are seven of them. And when you think about this, you think about good-looking, plump cows. And it is significant, too, the order in which this happens. The first thing he sees in the dream is the good cows, right? And there's seven of them. They come down to the Nile, and they're grazing. As he's standing by the Nile, then he sees seven thin cows that come up. That's the second thing that he sees. And that order is significant. And then the last thing that he sees is that these seven thin cows devour the seven good cows. And so that is the first dream that he has. Pharaoh wakes up after this first dream, and then he goes back to sleep. And he has a second dream. Second dream, incredibly similar. In this dream, he first sees seven good ears of grain. Second thing he sees is the seven scorched ears of grain. And then what happens is those seven thin ears of grain devour the good. So you can see the similarity between this. You have seven thin cows eating seven good cows in the first dream. In the second dream, you have seven thin, scorched ears of grain that are eating seven good ears of grain. And so these are the two dreams that he has. With these dreams, after he has these dreams, how does he react to these dreams? How does he feel about this? Scripture tells us that he's unsettled. He's troubled. He doesn't know what these dreams mean. He wants an interpretation. So what he does is that he's going to send out for who? If he knew who Joseph was, he should have sent straight for Joseph. He could have got a quick answer, couldn't he? But he sends for magicians of Egypt. He sends for the wise men of Egypt. Well, we mentioned this on Wednesday night. Do you think there were quite a few magicians and wise men in Egypt? Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. You have a pagan nation who offered all kinds of praises to sun gods and gods of all different types of false deities and such. Yeah, there's going to be plenty of wise men and people who claim to be magicians in Egypt. But does he get any answers? None of them can interpret this dream. And Freddie made a good point that even with, like, in certain situations and other passages, there are situations in which magicians and such could pull things off to make it look like they were of God or could do some pretty powerful things. They could do some trickery. But here, they can't even pull off any type of interpretation of what this dream means of the cows and of the grain. So, finally, the cupbearer remembers Joseph. How long has it been? 2 years. 2 years. So, we aren't really told specifically how long has Joseph been in prison. We don't know. But we do know that from his interpretation that he gave to the cupbearer and him telling him, please remember me, to this point of him finally speaking up to Pharaoh, it's been 2 years. Joseph has been waiting and waiting and waiting. And I like that at times it actually refers to the prison as the dungeon. That was actually in our text of the song we just sang, talking about people who are in the dungeon and suffer for the cause of Christ. You could put Joseph in that category. That's a pretty amazing thing to think about. He's sitting there and waiting and waiting and waiting for this cupbearer for something to happen in a positive manner because he is there unjustly. He doesn't belong there. But the cupbearer finally remembers Joseph. When he speaks to Pharaoh, what does he tell him? Exactly just a retelling of the story we read earlier. He tells him exactly of how when you were mad at us, Pharaoh, and put us in prison, there was a man there, a Hebrew, a youth, that told us what the interpretation of the dream was, and it came to pass. And I like that at the beginning of that statement, he says in verse 9, the cupbearer says, I would make mention today of my own offenses. What's he saying there? Yeah, he's saying, I finally remembered. This man named Joseph who can interpret dreams, you know. And Pharaoh's probably thinking, you know, Who knows how long he's been sending out people trying to get answers, you know, from magicians and wise men. But, you know, now I remember. I remember Joseph. So thankfully, he did remember Joseph and sent out, sent this message and spoke to Pharaoh. Let's look at verses 14 through 37. I'm going to read a large section here, but there's a lot to discuss. Beginning in verse 14. Then Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I've had a dream, but no one can interpret it. And I have heard it said about you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Joseph then answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. So Pharaoh spoke to Joseph, in my dream, behold, I was standing by the bank of the Nile. And behold, seven cows, fat and sleek, came up out of the Nile, and they grazed in the marsh grass. Lo, seven other cows came up after them, poor, and very ugly and gaunt, such as I had never seen for ugliness in all the land of Egypt. And the lean and ugly cows ate up the first seven fat cows. Then when they had devoured them, it could not be detected that they had devoured them, for they were just as ugly as before. Then I awoke. I also saw in my dream, and behold, seven ears full and good came up on a single stalk. And lo, seven ears withered, thin, and scorched by the east wind sprouted up after them. And the thin ears swallowed up the seven good ears. Then I told it to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me. Now Joseph said to Pharaoh, Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. God has told Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one and the same. The seven lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, and the seven thin ears scorched by the east wind will be 7 years of famine. It is as I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Behold, 7 years of great abundance are coming in all the land of Egypt, and after them 7 years of famine will come. And all the abundance will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will ravage the land. So the abundance will be unknown in the land because of that subsequent famine, for it will be very severe. Now as for the repeating of the dream to Pharaoh twice, it means that the matter is determined by God, and God will quickly bring it about. Now let Pharaoh look for a man, discerning and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh take action to appoint overseers in charge of the land, and let him exact a fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 years of abundance. Then let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming, and store up the grain for food in the cities under Pharaoh's authority, and let them guard it. Let the food become as a reserve for the land for 7 years of famine, which will occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land will not perish during the famine. Now the proposal seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his servants. So here there are some really interesting statements that are made. First off, Joseph has the opportunity finally to speak to Pharaoh. Now it's amazing that I think in the first place you have a man who is in the prison, in Pharaoh's prison, and he is brought forth to Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. That's pretty amazing within itself. It says that he shaves, he puts on clean clothing, and he goes to Pharaoh to speak to him. But Pharaoh tells Joseph his dreams. A couple statements that Pharaoh makes that I think are very interesting is look at verse 15. In verse 15, he says right off the bat, before he tells him what the dreams were, he says, I have had a dream, but no one can interpret it. And I have heard it about you, that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. So he's saying, no one's been able to interpret this. Right off the bat, I'm going to tell you, no one has figured out what this dream means, but I've heard that you can figure it out. I've heard that you can interpret dreams. And then also, after telling him what the dreams are, what does he say at the end? If you look at verse 24, after he finishes telling him about the thin ears swallowed the seven good ears, it says, then I told it to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me. He's making it clear to Joseph, no one could figure this dream out. I've spoken to my magicians, I've spoken to the wise men, no one knows the interpretation of this dream, or these two dreams. But I've heard that you can do it. And so that's interesting, I think, that before and after, he makes that very, very clear to him. The cupbearer and baker in chapter 40 could not find anyone to interpret their dreams either, could they? Joseph noticed they were in distress, right? How they looked and how their demeanor was, because they couldn't find answers either. Well, Pharaoh here can't find answers to his dream. Did the cupbearer and the baker, though, have the resources of all the magicians of the land and all the wise? No. They're in a prison. So they didn't have a whole lot of options, probably, as far as who all they could talk to try to get an interpretation. But Pharaoh has sought through all the land, searched the whole land to try to find an interpretation. He's found none. But now it's Joseph's opportunity. Rose?
Mm-hmm. That, you know, they were used to being able to go to someone for the interpretation of their dream. Obviously, like Pharaoh, being the man of power that he is, can send throughout the land and everybody will come to him.
Right.
But, you know, I think it would be a good point that, to know that they're familiar with people who so-called interpret dreams, and they were used to being able to go to them. But now they're stuck in prison because they made their boss very mad.
That's right. That's right. Those resources are gone.
Now they're dependent on who in the prison could possibly. Yeah.
It's an unlikely person to find in a prison, I would think, to find a man like Joseph, obviously, who has this ability. They probably were not expecting that at all, which makes it even more amazing that the cupbearer doesn't remember Joseph for so long. I mean, that's just shocking to me that he doesn't speak up sooner or you know. Seems like he just completely puts Joseph on the back burner, forgets about him. Who does Joseph, again, give credit for, or give credit to, I should say, concerning his ability to interpret dreams? The Lord is God. He makes that statement in verse 16. It says, Joseph then answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. And I love that Joseph always seeks to give God the glory. He knows that it's not within himself that he has this amazing ability to interpret dreams. It's because God gave him that ability. And he makes it clear to Pharaoh. Now think about the boldness it took to say this to Pharaoh. Does Pharaoh believe in Jehovah? No. No. But he's saying, it is in God that I have this ability. And he says that boldly to him. He is full of faith. And so that's an amazing thing that he makes such a statement, because he does give glory to God, and he is saying it to a person who is not a believer, obviously, in Jehovah God. Joseph interpreted Pharaoh's dreams, and he told Pharaoh that the dreams were one and the same. We can see the similarity between these two dreams also. Joseph also told Pharaoh that God was revealing to Pharaoh what he was about to do. So this is God telling Pharaoh specifically, here's what's going to happen, and it's going to come quickly. So these are very significant dreams that are given to Pharaoh, but also they're very significant that Joseph has to interpret them and needs to interpret them, obviously, for a long-term plan here. What was the meaning of these dreams? If you had to summarize, what's the meaning of these dreams?
7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine.
That's right. And that's why the order is so significant, that the first thing that he sees in both dreams is the good, the seven good, whether it's cows or grain. That's saying for the first 7 years, things are going to be in abundance here in Egypt. You're going to have plenty. And so the crops and everything are going to be bountiful. But what's going to follow that is when he sees the seven thin are not good, right? Whether it's cows or grain. That's representing 7 years of what? Famine. You've got 7 years of famine coming your way. And an interesting thing about that is, at the end of the dreams, when the seven thin ears or the seven thin cows eat the seven good cows or seven good ears of grain, that is saying that the famine is going to be so severe that you're not even going to remember the years of abundance. Now, you imagine how bad that's going to be. If we had 7 years of plenty here in Warren County, wow, that'd be great. You know, everything's just, you know, we're all just doing great. 7 years of drought or famine, and it's going to be so severe that you won't even remember when things were good. That's severe. That's severe. And so he makes this interpretation of Pharaoh. This is the first time he has heard an interpretation of the dream and what it means. And so he tells him exactly what's going to happen. Why were these dreams, which have the same meaning, repeated to Pharaoh? Why didn't God just give him the dream about the cows? Why did he give him a dream about the cows and also about ears of grain, two separate dreams? That Joseph makes that point. He says it's because it's going to happen. It is God putting his stamp and saying it is confirmed. this is going to happen. That is why he had two dreams. It was confirming it, and that's stated in verse 32. It meant that the matter was determined by God, and God would quickly bring it about. So that has some significance, too, that Joseph is able to communicate that to Pharaoh. What was Joseph's proposed plan to Pharaoh? Keep a fifth of all the crops during the 7 years of abundance, right? Now, here's a couple of things that I think are interesting here. Did Pharaoh ask for him to come up with a plan? It doesn't even seem like Joseph even pauses as he's going through and he tells the interpretation of the dream. And then he tells, here's what you need to do. It's pretty amazing that there's not a pause and then Pharaoh says, oh no, what are we going to do about this? There's going to be 7 years of abundance and 7 years of famine. What are we going to do? You know, it could be that Joseph could have stopped there. He gave the interpretation. Didn't he do what he was supposed to do? He gave the interpretation. It's amazing that he has the ability here and the wisdom to not only interpret the dream, but also say, here's what you need to do. Here's the plan. Now, that's bold. You're speaking to the king of Egypt. And who is Joseph? A Hebrew, a slave, a prisoner, accused of trying to rape a commander's wife. Who are you to tell Pharaoh anything? If you think about, like, if you think about it on that level from Pharaoh's point of view, Pharaoh could have just been like, thanks for the interpretation. We'll leave it there. But he sees the wisdom in Joseph. How did Joseph have the ability to come up with a plan? Is that all in Joseph? No. Over and over and over, we see the Lord is with Joseph. That is how Joseph has the ability to not only interpret the dream, but also to say, Pharaoh, here's what you need to do. And that's exactly what the plan is to take a fifth of what is there during the years of abundance. Some scholars and such, they make the comment that during this time, they believe that it's possible that Pharaoh had a tax or had something of that sort that would have been a tenth. A tenth. And that sounds, you know, that probably sounds about right. So if they were to say, all right, we're going to have to set out a fifth, you're doubling really what the tax would be on the people in some ways to store up grain in storehouses. You might be thinking, how would the people of Egypt have reacted to this? Yeah, but that's the thing. It's during the years of abundance. That's the significance of it, is that they're doing this during the years of abundance. And it seems like also the wisdom of Joseph was so apparent. I mean, just so obvious to Pharaoh as he spoke that it was like, I trust him. And we're going to see some of those statements of why he believed that. No doubt about it. So he provides a plan. He provides a solution to the revealed dream. This allowed Pharaoh not only to see that the Lord was with Joseph, but also through his interpretation, he gave him wisdom to do the plan. Yeah, Pax? What was it? Oh, I'm sorry.
You're talking about Joseph and his wisdom. Uh-huh. It goes back to verse 16 when he tells Pharaoh, it is not in me, God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer.
That's right.
So the answer for the interpretation of the dream comes from God. The plan comes from God as well.
That's right.
Joseph doesn't take credit at all.
That's right. That's exactly right. Do you have any other comments before we move on into this next section of verse 38?
It's important to remember that the east wind was not a favorable wind ever in that land. And if the winds were coming out of the east, and they were coming from the desert regions, it would be very hot and dry. So I don't think we need to
That's a good point.
Forget that. That is also of significance here.
Good. Uh-huh, Pax?
Was already enough to supply the normal export, but then also elevators and stuff in it, and it's close to where the Sphinx and all those things are. I've been there, but they have these huge storage things that are 100 feet across, and a sails thing across the top. I think that's where they stored all this grain in that time period, and then dispersed it out and dispersed it.
Wow, that's amazing. It definitely shows that the Lord is with Joseph, and I mean, it's a wonderful plan. And so Pharaoh's reaction to the plan is definitely a positive one. Let's look at verse 38. Then Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find a man like this?" Now let's make this comment real quick. What was the thing that he said you need to do outside of saving a fifth? You need to find who? A wise man. You needed a wise and discerning man, right? Verse 38. Then Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find a man like this, in whom is a divine spirit?" So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has informed you of all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and according to your command, all my people shall do homage. Only in the throne will I be greater than you." Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took off his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand. He clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold necklace around his neck. He had him ride in a second chariot, and they proclaimed before him, "Bow the knee." And he set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Though I am Pharaoh, yet without your permission, no one shall raise his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh named Joseph Zaphnath-Paneah, and he gave him Asnath, the daughter of Potiphar, a priest of On, as his wife. And Joseph went forth over the land of Egypt. Now Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. During the 7 years of plenty of the land, he brought forth, verse 47, during the 7 years of plenty, the land brought forth abundantly. So he gathered all the food of these 7 years, which occurred in the land of Egypt, and placed the food in cities. He placed in every city the food from its own surrounding fields. Thus Joseph stored up grain in great abundance, like the sand of the sea, until he stopped measuring it, for it was beyond measure. So Pharaoh needs a wise man. He's looking for a wise man. That's what Joseph said that he needs after he interprets the dream as part of this proposed plan. So he says in verse 38, "Can we find a man like this, in whom is the divine spirit?" Also in verse 39, Pharaoh said, "Since God has informed you of all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you are." So Pharaoh is saying, "I'm very impressed with Joseph. I see Joseph's wisdom. I see there's something unique about Joseph." And we have talked about over and over again, did Potiphar even see that the Lord was with him? Yeah. I mean, it's been apparent. The people that come in contact with Joseph see that Joseph is different. You could even say the chief jailer saw that there was uniqueness in Joseph and elevated him to a position in the jail. And so over and over again, people see that something is different about Joseph and that the Lord is with him and that everything that Joseph does is caused to prosper. And so even in this short meeting, it sounds like Pharaoh sees this in Joseph, that the Lord is with him. And that's impressive that he sees the wisdom of Joseph. What did Pharaoh do for Joseph? Makes him second in command. Some people say that's kind of like a prime minister if you think about some countries and some nations. But he puts him in charge of all of Egypt. He becomes second in command. He's second only to Pharaoh. And then think about all the things that he gives Joseph. There's a list here of several things that are given from Pharaoh to Joseph, which really signifies the power and authority that's being given from Pharaoh to Joseph. The first thing it says that he gave him is his signet ring. What's the significance of a signet ring?
That's his official seal.
It's his official seal, right? So if you had, for instance, if you had Pharaoh's signet ring during this time, what would you be able to do? Do about anything you want. I mean, and that means, like, I can make decrees. You know, I could make probably laws for the land as far as what needs to be done or what I think needs to be done. Is it in many ways like a blank check? I mean, you think about it that way, it's like you have some financial authority, I would think, over the land of Egypt too. So Pharaoh is saying, "Joseph, I trust you so much. Here's my signet ring. You do what you need to do. I trust you." That's unheard of. Can you imagine in the United States of America if our president pulled someone out of prison and said, this person has authority to do whatever they want to do in this nation? What? You know, I mean, it's absurd to think about what happens here. But it's all because the Lord is with Joseph. I mean, that's what's so amazing about this story, is the faith of Joseph and the Lord being with Joseph throughout. And then he gives him garments of fine linen. He gives him a gold necklace. He allows Joseph to ride in his second chariot so people of Egypt would see that Joseph has authority. It even says that they would proclaim before him. What would they say before him? Bow the knee? Bow the knee to this Hebrew who was a slave, who was in prison, who's been accused of rape or trying to rape someone? Wow. I mean, that is God taking someone from the lowest of lows, and he does this over and over with Joseph, to the highest of highs. That is amazing. And then Pharaoh even tells Joseph, though I am Pharaoh, yet without your permission, no one shall raise his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. In verse 44. Pharaoh changes name to Zaphnath-Paneah. When you look up this name, and there might be a footnote in your Bible about that name. When you look up that name, it's an Egyptian name, and you'll find several translations. And I will say many people are having, there's a little bit of difficulty pinning down exactly what that term might mean. But you'll find that some say that it means God speaks and he lives. And this is a name Pharaoh gave to Joseph. God speaks and he lives. Another statement that some believe it means is that it's the one who furnishes the nourishment of life. That was Joseph's job here, to furnish the nourishment of life. The preserver of life is what some say that name means. And then also some say the name means the revealer of secrets, the man to whom secrets are revealed. What an interesting name. I mean, if you take any of those four names, it speaks to how Pharaoh thought about Joseph and what was so obvious to him that the Lord was with him. Pharaoh also gave him a wife. He gave him a wife. Her name was Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, priest of On. Her name, the name Asenath, refers to being devoted to the goddess of Neth, which is an Egyptian goddess of wisdom or the gift of the sun god. What do you think was the purpose in Pharaoh changing Joseph's name and giving him the daughter of Potiphar? Make him more like an Egyptian. That's right. Make him more accepted among the Egyptian people. Because we just talked about it. He's a Hebrew and all these other things, right? Well, he now has an Egyptian name. He has a wife who's an Egyptian that was the Potiphar's daughter. So it's adding these things to make him more accepted in Egypt, obviously with the people. So what a drastic change of events for Joseph, going through from the lowest of lows to the highest of highs in many ways. So we see the patience of Joseph. A passage that I think really comes to mind as you read of Joseph is Isaiah chapter 40. I'll just read verse 41. Yet those who wait on the Lord will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary. It's a scripture that many of us know well. It's a scripture that there's a hymn that uses this text also. But you think about, did Joseph had to wait on the Lord? He had to wait. He had to exercise great patience. But throughout, what happened was, is God gave him strength. God sustained him, even in the deepest and darkest of times. But Joseph, in the end, was very, very richly blessed, and the Lord provided for him and took care of him and gave him strength. So Joseph carries out this plan. We're told in verse 46 that Joseph was 30 years old. He was second only to Pharaoh in Egypt. He goes throughout all the land of Egypt, and he begins to gather the food. Joseph's interpretation was exactly right as far as what happened. There are 7 years of great abundance in Egypt. They have these storehouses that are out by the various fields, and he is storing up the grain. How abundant was the grain during the 7 years of plenty? It was like what? The sand. Right? We've heard that analogy or that metaphor before, but it was in great abundance, like the sand of the sea. He stopped measuring it, for it was beyond measure. So it sounds like early on, maybe they were measuring it, trying to make sure, you know, what they had and see what they had. Eventually, it's like, we have so much grain. It's in such abundance. We can't even measure it anymore. That was the Lord blessing them and preparing them for these 7 years of famine that would come. Let's look at verses 50 and 52. Now, before the year of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, priest of On, bore to him. Joseph named the firstborn Manasseh, for he said, God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. He named the second Ephraim, for he said, God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. So Joseph is blessed with two sons. It's during this time before the year of famine. And the first son that he has is Manasseh. And we've read before about how Rachel would make comments. If you remember, Rachel would make comments, and some of the other people would make comments when a child was born. And we see that here. Manasseh is born, and Joseph makes the comment, for God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. And then with Ephraim, he makes the comment, for God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. What's the significance of these statements by Joseph? He recognized two things. What? That's right. God's in charge. He helped me to what? Forget. Help me to be what? Fruitful. Same's true for us. We've got to be the same way. And we experience this in some ways, maybe to a much different degree, as far as it's in a spiritual way. But we think about there are times of great difficulty. And we have to forget. We have to move on. And sometimes the circumstances beyond our control. We have to move on. And then the Lord also blesses us and makes us fruitful and bountiful. And so he gives these names, and these names have significance, like they have throughout most of the Old Testament that we've been reading through the book of Genesis. So there's a definite application there. Yeah. Did his job. Right. For moment to moment, yeah. In whatever circumstance, he decides, I'm going to trust. That's right. And it could be I'm in prison. Could be I'm with Potiphar. I'm with Pharaoh. I'm going to trust. That's right. Yeah, Doug? That's right. And that's the faith that kept him going through this whole ordeal. theme of Genesis is men who trust in the promises of God. And that's what we're seeing again. Yeah. Not knowing how it's going to happen or play out, but they trust. That's right. Let's read these last few verses. When the 7 years of plenty which had been in the land of Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began to come, just as Joseph had said, then there was famine in all the lands, but in the land of Egypt there was bread. So when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried out to Pharaoh for bread, and Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, go to Joseph, whatever he says to you, you shall do. Then the famine was spread over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened up the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, and the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. The people of all the earth came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe in all the earth. It's amazing to consider that there is a famine here in Egypt, but also the famine is spread to where? It's all the earth. It's all over. And Joseph and his interpretations of his dreams come to pass exactly like he had said. And wow, what amazing a power and authority that he has. For Pharaoh to say, when all the people of Egypt are coming to him saying, we're famished, we need food, what can you do for us, Pharaoh? Please give us something. He says, go to who? Go to Joseph. Go to Joseph. Joseph will take care of it. And he did. He trusted him that much. And here's just one thing I want to show you. The highs and lows of Joseph. You could add a lot more to this. You think about, he's the favorite son of Jacob. What a high that would have been. But then he's thrown into a pit. He's sold by his brothers. What a low. But then you think he becomes head over Potiphar's house and given that authority. Then he's sent to prison for a crime he didn't commit. But even in the prison, he was given a position of authority. You could kind of put that as a high, I guess you could say, too. But here, he's second only to Pharaoh in Egypt. That's amazing. It's amazing the consistency you see of his faith, but also God providing for him and Joseph trusting in the promises of God. It's an amazing story. All right. Thank you all very much for your attention. I appreciate it.